This is Dr. Donald S. Reinhardt. I would like to take this opportunity to discuss brass instrument cupped mouthpieces. First of all, a mouthpiece consists of five basic components. One, the rim. Two, the cup. Three, the shoulder, which is rarely ever mentioned and very important. The throat, which is the hole, so to speak. And the backbore. All five factors contribute to the net result. Assuming that it fits into the leader pipe of the instrument properly and all that, we're going to restrict it strictly to mouthpieces right now. Originally, mouthpieces were made from wood. Persimmons, teak wood, oak, hickory, or any other hard wood you can imagine was the substance in which the mouthpiece was supposed to be cut from. The rims in the early days were perfectly flat. Now, maybe I dreamt this and maybe I didn't, but it seems to me that in the Smithsonian Institution, when I first saw these wood creations, they had a flat rim, a small cup, a very small throat and long throat, and a backbore, I should say, which was exceedingly short. Those were the initial attempts at mouthpieces. I don't know how many years that goes back, but we're back in biblical times, I'm quite sure, with those dates somewhere. Now, for a person to just put their finger in a cup or to get one of those mouthpieces, which even on a clear day, you can't see the bottom of the cup. A deep cup with that toilet bowl Bach idea does not mean a big sound unless the other four components match with this big toilet bowl cup. I can show you tests of tremendously deep cups with the Bach toilet bowls. That sounds so nasal you'd burst out laughing, because the other four components do not match. A mouthpiece at best, no matter what it's made from, is only a compromise. Almost every player goes through the mouthpiece disease. In his childhood, it was measles, whooping cough, maybe scarlet fever, and we regard them as childhood diseases. Whether we were inoculated or not, we would still maybe get them or we wouldn't get them. So we charge that all up to childhood diseases. But now players get the mouthpiece disease. It's an inner conceit when you start blaming mouthpieces and blaming horns. It's no use me telling you not to do it. You'll do it anyway. That's part of life. You must experience it yourself, and you must waste enough money while experiencing it. Then you'll learn your lesson. If you are playing correctly, you can play on a gas pipe. Is that clear? And it's not the mouthpiece, it's not the horn. Buddy, it's you. Before I became a teenager, I certainly was aware that Pop had a lathe, a South Bend lathe, in the cellar. And I started experimenting on this lathe, trying to make a so-called trumpet, trombone, and French horn mouthpieces. My first attempts were extremely crude, to say the least. And I started experimenting with rims, cup depths, cup shapes, different shoulders, different size throats, and certainly different size and different designs of backbores. I don't know how much material and money that I wasted, but it was quite a lot, believe me. But I did learn a great deal from that. Oh, to give you an idea of some of my early experiments, I thought, well, since one type of tongue, Ola Schlossberg says, da or ta for the low register, do or to for the middle, D or T for the high register, I wanted to make a cup for just that purpose. So I made three cups. One for ta, one for two, and one for T. The only trouble with that was, as you must have learned with the early Perduba mouthpiece, which was patentable, by the way, which Harry James always put his name on and whatnot, that everything is very good until you hit into the different cups. And when your airstream moves around and hits into the different cups, you have different timbres or different tone qualities. That in one cup, you sound like Mr. Smith, another one Mr. Jones, and then another one after that, Harry Zilch or something. But there are three different timbres when you hit into three different cups. I learned that very early in life. Then I got an idea. What would happen if you slowed down the spiral motion of the airstream in the mouthpiece? And in case you don't know that, it's like water running out of the bathtub. So I made deep grooves in the mouthpiece cup, leading from the rim all the way into the throat of the mouthpiece, thinking that would slow down the rotation of the spiral motion inside of the cup. Boy, was I wrong. That was the biggest fizzle I ever made in my entire life. However, at least I had the experience of going through it. And I think with each experience, I learned a little bit more each time. I've been fooling with mouthpiece construction, I would say, without exaggeration, from my 10th year on. And since right now, I'm getting up in the 70s quite a bit, I think that gives me lifelong experience on mouthpiece construction. Some of the things I see on the market are a joke. They're always wrong at one place or another. Now, I very early found out that metal with certain people is a serious detriment, just like my strenuous objection to any form of gold plating. And if you want to discuss the objection to that, I'll be happy as hell to discuss it with you. My little doctor up the street says 80% of the people are allergic to gold. Burning sensations after an evening's plane. Swollen lips and all. That is an allergy, period. And I will give you different examples if you'll bring that question up. So why don't you write it down now to remind me, because lately I've been more or less of a champion at forgetting things. Now, when you talk about mouthpiece construction and the bores of instruments, we come to a point where we discuss what is a good sound. Now, if you want to start an argument, that's the way to start it. I don't like a dead sound. I don't like you holding up a trumpet, and while you're playing this trumpet, it sounds exactly like a flugelhorn, And then your teacher, whoever he is, calls it symphonic. You tell him he's a goddamn liar. He doesn't know a thing about it. I came out of Curtis. I know what is symphonic and what isn't. And the very men that preach that don't sound that way themselves. I can give you two examples, but professionally, I don't want to mention names. Now, we stated that a mouthpiece consists of five components: the rim, the cup, the shoulder, the throat, and the backboard. And that all the components contribute towards a net result: blowing resistance, sound, response, and everything else you can think of. Now, all that is very, very important. But it's actually the high spot on the rim that you feel. Nobody ever mentions these things. I want to show you why I approve of flat rims for a person who expects to play a great deal of first trumpet or first trombone. I want to discuss that with each one of you, and I wish you'd bring up all kinds of questions. Now, I have a Bunny Bergen mouthpiece in which I flattened out the rim. I took micrometers, two of them to be exact, and figured it out scientifically on a mathematical basis, and taking that same mouthpiece and bringing it up to a trombone size with the same flat rim, the same cup, the same shoulder, the same everything as I found in the Bergen mouthpiece. And for Bill Harris and a number of others, it worked out great, to say the least. I'll show you an example of that. But in a mouthpiece discussion, believe me, I'm not trying to give you the mouthpiece disease. A mouthpiece disease means that every other week you turn up with a new mouthpiece. I don't know where you get the money for all these things, but that, of course, is your business too. However, it is wrong. You knock your intonation all apart. You knock your control apart. You break down your confidence, whatever little or how much you ever had. No, it's wrong. Get a fairly sensible mouthpiece and stay on the mouthpiece. Now we come down to materials. As early as 1940, I started a great deal of experimenting on plastic. In those days, we only had Lucite or plexiglass, and the impact strength was alarmingly low, that if you dropped it, you're liable to crack the stem and all that sort of thing. Well, I made them on lathes before that, and all through my 10 years at the Fox Theater, I used to use a transparent plastic mouthpiece. And he used to call me Reinhardt with his glass mouthpiece. Pardon the idiots. One woman put her head over the rail one day when I was playing the show. She says, "You know, I've been watching you." And she says, "What I see going on inside that mouthpiece is filthy." I said, "Madam, I'm sorry. I thought you paid to come in to see the show, not look at my mouthpiece. Thank you very much for your consideration." In the early 40s, I better say 1940, Garth Pitcairn, a friend of mine and a student, was a student of trumpet and French horn, studying with me when actually at the time the war broke out with Mr. Hitler and the Japanese. He said, "After the war is over, I'm coming back. The first day that I'm out." He was an ensign, by the way. And he says, "We're going to make those mouthpieces. I think they are tremendous." So I thought that during the service and all that, he'd forget about it. I assure you, he did not forget about it. And he did come to me the first day that he was out of the service. He says, "Now we can get down and talk about a thing called mouthpieces." Well, I needed someone like Mr. Pitcairn, because I certainly didn't have the kind of money it takes to run lengthy experiments and tests on a thing like molding mouthpieces under hydraulic pressure. So we had to engage two engineers and a chemist and all that, which is not the place exactly for a more or less poor man like myself. It's more like a millionaire. Well, Mr. Pitcairn filled that bill very good. And out of that first group of molds, I don't want to mention price here, even in 1940, well, it was a tremendous amount of money. And right now, I think you could multiply that by four or five and still be completely truthful about the net result on the cost of these molds, which are made for hydraulic pressure. Now, these are not made like an Ajax comb or like you're going to mold Jell-O at home, where you put the stuff in and when it cools, you open the mold and out pops the article. No. These are made under hydraulic pressure. So the molecular strength of the plastic can be changed to such a degree that I could make a mouthpiece as soft as a shower curtain or as so hard by molecular strength in jamming the molecules together that if you touch it with your fingernail, the mouthpiece would turn to dust. Now, as it stands today, the impact strength of plastic is tremendous. So tremendous that your Volkswagen bearings, your electric fans, your air conditioners, your refrigerators, your washers and all now run on plastic bearings. So don't tell me it's not as hard as metal, because I will take this time to burst out laughing. The impact strength has increased tremendously to such an extent that you can take the average mouthpiece of ABS, that's acrylic butyl styrene, and throw it against the wall. And you not only won't break it, you can't even scratch it. So I think the whole scene has changed. The beauty of ABS is there's no heat and cold problem. In other words, there would be no difference if you're out and were forced into playing something as stupid as the Mummers Parade on New Year's Day, or you're recording in some studio under some hot studio lights. So the temperature factor is great in itself. It is much, much cleaner. And the models, I can assure you, have been time-tested hundreds of times. I could almost say thousands of times. And I still wouldn't be lying to you. So I think the model is great. The models are great. And the substance is great. I think you're going to see a mouthpiece revolution. It's going to take people time. Now, for example, there were three people in the Johnny Carson show in the trombone department that just adopted my plastic mouthpieces. Don't worry, it'll be 3 years till it gets to the East Coast. The East Coast never accepts anything until about 3 years after California does. They say, oh, yeah, I saw those white crazy looking things on the Johnny Carson program. What the hell are those things? Is that something new? Now this is 3 years later. Look at the octave trumpet. Call it the piccolo trumpet if that makes you happier. Only the piccolo trumpet is a nickname. It's called the octave correctly. They're using those all over California. Four valve octave trumpets. 3 years later, they'll get onto it here. Believe me, they'll finally say, gee, what's that little thing? The regular trumpet is 54 inches, and I hear that's only 27 inches, and it's got four valves. Now the bastards are starting to wake up, and this is 3 years later. That don't forget, this is the East Coast. It's got to be on the West Coast first, or it isn't right. When I predicted flugelhorns were definitely in the picture, 14 to 15 years ago, they said I was from outer space and that I was insane. Then along came a bunch of flugelhorn players, and all of a sudden I wasn't quite as crazy as I was in the first place. Now it's octave trumpets. Believe me, you're going to get a four-valve octave trumpet before too many moons pass around, because you're going to see the fever increasing. In other words, California's starting it. Look out. 3 years later, save your money. Get your trumpet. It is true that in California, I understand you have 279 cults and religions and a bunch of eager beavers like that. And you say, isn't that insane? Well, it all depends how you look at it. But the average Californian, if you show him that two and two makes four, man, he's all for you. Around here, in this area, they'll say, what the hell's the guy building? Is he kidding? Guy's out of his mind. Now, 3 years later, that same guy will accept the whole thing. Now, what do you do with stupid pig heads like that? Logic is logic. And 40 years ago, when I said, when tradition doesn't spell logic, then tradition stinks. Now, that's not saying much today. But 40 years ago, my God, I was called every name in the sailor's vocabulary because I made a statement like that. But now it's truer than ever. And even those pig heads will admit that it's true. Or it won't.
I've just changed recorders. This is a GE gear-driven recorder. I hope it's not too drastic for you. I want to continue my discussion, and I do not have the other recorder here at the time. Now, they were talking about substances from mouthpieces. Why do they have to be metal? Why? One guy says, oh, it's got to vibrate. I got an answer for that. It does like hell. Where did he ever get his knowledge from? Some idiot teaching Arbenz, beating time and calling it lesson? That's not a teacher. That's a page-turning idiot. And the country abounds with them now. You think I'm going out of into left field because I'm talking about ABS. Acrylic butyl styrene, which is actually a plastic, but it's a you cannot see through it, so except like in my early ones. But oddly enough, when plastic becomes transparent, it becomes more brittle by degrees. At least that's what my engineers tell me. And I gotta go by what they tell me, because there's over 2,200 kinds of plastic, and I've run tests on, I don't know how many tests, that would feel good on the lips. And we had over 500 people tell us that what we used feels the best of the lot, and that's why I put that out. I think that is all well past the point of experiment. Now I'm going to make another statement. I've stated already, why do we use pistons in this country on trumpets? Why? Three pistons, three of them. They require constant attention or they stick. I don't care what kind of springs you use or who made the trumpet. What is wrong with rotary valves? I had Mr. Eldon Benge completely sold on that right before he died. First of all, we were experimenting in a trumpet with four valves. I mean, a regular, honest to God, 54-inch B-flat trumpet with rotary valves. I can't understand why we have to go to Germany, Italy, or France to get rotary valves. We have rotary valves on French horns. We even have them on trombones, and we have them on tubas. Now, why can't we have them on trumpets? Why not? A rotary valve requires very little attention. It used to be that the excuse was, well, the strings break. Then the strings went to metal. And they said, well, the metal gets noisy as they get older. Click, 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 up next to the microphone. That was the objection then. I think now, with plastic, they're running out of objections. They don't know what to say anymore. Except, all these big corporations have stockholders. And they don't want to pay $750,000 to retool and re-dye to make a trumpet, rotary valves and four valves. Now the four valves were meant for symphonic players who did not appreciate lipping notes up or down. Therefore, they have ever so many more choices for fingering. I don't recommend that for an all-around trumpet, no. Except an all-around trumpet, I still think, should be on the basis of rotary valve. Mr. Benz agreed with me, and Mr. Benz started experimenting. The first one we made was with pistons. We never realized that adding another valve casing and a piston would weigh that much. This thing would break your left hand. It was worse than a Con Constellation from the early days, which was like a Mark 7 tank as far as holding it up is concerned. It was too heavy. So he went to Bavaria somewhere, or Germany, I don't know where he did, and he got a new substance, which was to replace brass. It was twice as strong and very, very light, 25% of the weight, but I might say four times as expensive. And he started working on this, and that's the week the poor man was killed. And that was the end of our experiment. However, there is one man, it's too bad he's not around anymore, who did go along with progressive ideas if two and two made four. Now, don't be alarmed at all if I make this statement. I probably will not be around anymore because at the moment I'm well over 70. But eventually you're going to see plastic so-called brass instruments. The plastic technology is increasing to such a rapid degree that right now there's over 2,200 forms of plastic. Think of that. Go ahead and think of it a minute. You think you're going to keep it out forever with some of your square ideas that you learned in those stinking colleges from those professors who were page turners and didn't know a goddamn thing in the first place? Forgive me for my abrupt burst out, so to speak. But I'm Dr. Donald S. Reinhardt, and I hope you heard this.